If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello, welcome to the Ruler podcast. I'm Ian Parkinson. As the Vuelta a España winds its way from Nîmes in the south of France to the Spanish capital, there's a distinctly Iberian feel to this edition. The last Grand Tour of the year sometimes struggles to get the same attention as its French and Italian counterparts, but it's not for want of trying. This year, the riders will cover 3,300 kilometres with 5 mountain stages, including, on the penultimate day, the fearsome climb of the Angliru, which hits more than 23% in parts. We'll be hearing from the man who won 16 stages at the Vuelta across his career and won the race overall in 1988, Sean Kelly. Sean will be talking us through his collection of jerseys and trophies, including the GC jersey from that Vuelta, which in those days was yellow rather than the red of today. We'll also hear from the man whose job it is to keep the Vuelta punching above its weight, race director Javier Guillen. But first, the familiar voice of David Miller, who rode the Vuelta 7 times, won 5 stages, and liked Spain so much, he moved there.
That was my favourite Grand Tour for just, I mean, the Tour was my, kind of what I lived for, but for just being a bike racer, the Vuelta for sure, because you could just go there, you had no stress, it doesn't have the same pressure, you don't have the same responsibilities there as you would do at Tour de France. The Vuelta normally get there and the team had already kind of ticked all its boxes for the year, so I could just go and race the bike however I wanted. And I used to love that. That's why I got so many good results there, I won so many stages, because just loved it. Just loved being able to go out and race my bike and not have to worry about anything else. And I think that's the same for many riders. We treated the Vuelta as our favourite. And again, it's each race, it's very much, it reflects its culture. And Spain as a whole is very relaxed and a kind of happy-go-lucky place. And I think that was reflected in the Vuelta.
Was that a factor in you deciding to move there and make your home there?
No, not really. I mean, because we were just trying to find a place in where the training was good. And I had thought of it, was thinking about Tuscany, but spent some time there. I was like, no, my wife came, she was like, no. And so it's Christian Vandeveld. He said, well, just come and spend a couple of days with me in Girona. I'd never been to Girona. And I went there, and within 2 days, we were like, yeah, this is perfect. And you can see now there's what, 60 pros there. It is perfect for professional cycling, for training, for being a professional cyclist. And so it was chosen for purely professional reasons, and now we live there permanently and kind of have fallen in love with it.
David Miller. Sean Kelly will forever be remembered as one of the greatest classics riders of all time, but especially towards the end of his career, he was a strong Grand Tour rider as well. In 1988, he won the Vuelta after a 3-week battle that was really only decided in the time trial with 2 days to go. Mementos of his long career were on display at last year's Ruler Classic. Sean Kelly, we're standing in front of an extraordinary collection of jerseys and trophies and memorabilia. Throughout your career, did you just collect these all the time?
Well, I think I was lucky because I lived in Belgium with a family, Herman and Elise Nice, and Herman, he went about collecting the trophies because at the race, of course, when you finish a race, you go to the podium, you get your trophy, but then it goes to the team truck or the team car and is left in there, and if you don't take it out and take it home, well, then it gets mislaid and given to a cafe somewhere in Belgium or in France. And so he looked after that, and that's the reason I have such a magnificent collection.
I remember probably at the time seeing a picture of your you with your Paris-Roubaix bike, I think the day or so, a couple of days afterwards, still sort of unwashed, sort of back at home.
Yes, well, I think we see a lot of the Paris-Roubaix bikes of the winners who they just leave them as they finish the race. And, you know, they display them, and that, I think, was the reason I was keeping it for the bike supplier, and just to, I suppose, keep the memories of the great day in the Hell of the North in Roubaix. Keep it going. When you have it there in your garage, you can look at it over a number of days.
Let's start with this jersey down here, which is you've actually framed, the Tour de France, the yellow jersey, famous yellow jersey from the Tour de France in 1983. Talk us through your memories, if you can, of 1983 at the Tour.
Well, I suppose the good memories when you get the yellow jersey in the Tour of France, of course, they're always good, but also there's some bad ones, because I took it, the jersey, on the stage in Tepoe the next day. Was a big mountain stage, so I lost it immediately on the next day. So I only carried the yellow jersey for one day. So yes, it's a dream, I suppose, come true for any professional to have yellow jersey in the Tour of France. But it was a short-lived one for me.
I think I can see two of the green jerseys from your tours. The green jersey, of course, which you were famous for winning. You almost had your name on them. There's one over there from 1989.
Well, there was a number of green jerseys, of course. I won it a number of times. So 89 was my last one. I was riding with the PDM team. So, yeah, it's a one I remember a bit more clearer than the other ones because it was my final one. You know, I was riding very well. I crashed in the beginning of season, was out for a number of weeks, so I came to the Tour of France quite fresh, with a lot of energy, and yeah, it was one of the tours that I enjoyed a lot because I was up there in the general classification, but I won the green jersey pretty comfortably.
Looking back at the years that you rode, the many years that you rode the tours, what are your sort of happiest memories? What are your best memories from the tour?
Well, the best memories are the years where you finish really good. When you finish your Tour of France in the final week and you're really feeling good, well, then physically you're feeling good. Mentally, then also, you know, it's really good. So you enjoy you enjoy no matter what the outcome. And, of course, if you're going into Paris in the final days, and especially arriving on the Champs-Élysées on the final day in a green jersey, you know, it's a great feeling, and it's an achievement, because to finish the Tour of France but to come onto the Champs-Élysées with one of the jerseys, and the green jersey is a very important one in the Tour of France, you have to be finishing well, and they are the good ones when you do finish in that situation. But some years, you know, you struggle in the final week, and then it is a difficult one because you start to suffer all through the final week, no matter what the parcours is. If it's the flat stages or the mountain stages, you're just counting down the days to get to the Champs-Élysées and get to Paris.
Right up in the corner there is a jersey which we don't see anymore, the combined jersey. A lot of people won't even know what the combined jersey looks like. For the combined jersey from the Tour in 1989, for those too young to remember, what was the combined jersey?
Well, it's a combined classement, of course, you know, in the general classification, in the mountains, in the points, all of that is put together, and then it's the smallest total number of points, your leader in that competition, and that's something that we haven't seen for many years in the Tour.
Before we move on to the other Grand Tours, there's a couple of white jerseys from Paris-Nice, again, which a race which you won seven times?
Seven, yes. Amazing, you know, winning Paris-Nice seven times, and it's a race that I was, really had a lot of luck in the race, because to win a race seven times on the trot, let's not forget, not to have a crash and to go out of the race, I seem to be so lucky in that race, and from the time I had, won three or four times, I did not really, concentrate and focus big time on Paris-Nice. I was trying to, think of more of the classics a number of weeks later, but always found myself in the decisive breakaways. Also, I think I was lucky with crashes and that, just managed to be in the right place and not get tied up in crashes. And, yeah, that's something I think I will always remember Paris-Nice was one of the races where I was very lucky. You have to be okay, you have to be in good shape to win it, but sometimes, yeah, luck is very important, because if it's the other way and you have a bit of bad luck, you can lose a race so easily.
You rode the Giro, but it was never that was never really a lucky race for you, unlike Paris-Nice in some ways, was it?
No, well, I rode the Giro on just one occasion when I was at the end of my career with Festina. The reason I went to this, I went to the race, was to get the team started, because if I was not on the start, on the team for the start, well, then the team wasn't going to be getting an invitation. And the deal was that I would do it 10 days. And I just, you know, when you go with that idea and that mentality, of course, it's very difficult to have a good race, because you know you're going home after a certain number of days.
What was the experience like of riding the Giro, though, compared to the Tour? Can you remember that?
During my career, it was a race I would have liked to have, you know, ridden during my my good days. And when I went to it in the 92 with Festina, I enjoyed it, although I wasn't, you know, I wasn't really, you know, focused, and I wasn't really taking it serious, but I still enjoyed it. But I would have loved to ride it during the times of Moser, when it wasn't so difficult mountainous-wise, because the organisers made it to suit those Italian riders. And it would have been, you know, a sort of a route, a parkour that would have suited my style as well, because we all know the big mountains was, you know, the most difficult one, where I was, you know, at my least strongest.
You were riding the Grand Tours, and your career stretched over some absolutely legendary names. I mean, in some ways you were unlucky that there were so many giants of the sport riding at the same time as you. So you started with Merckx, riding at the same time as Merckx, and finished with Indurain. Do you think that we'll see people dominating the sport? I mean, you have people now who win maybe one of the Grand Tours, and or they specialise in classics, but you know, people like Merckx and others, they dominated every type of racing in the way that you did as well. You did the classics, you did the monuments like Liège-Bastogne Liège, and you did the Grand Tours as well. Has cycling changed so much now that we'll never see that sort of dominance again?
Well, I think we could see riders winning two big tours in a season, and if you look at most recent, I suppose Tour of France and the Vuelta is possible, but to do Giro and Tour, that is becoming, you know, very difficult, and it looks like that it's pretty much impossible to do. And the reason being, you know, the Giro, it's such a difficult race now, and the time between finish of Giro and the start of the Tour of France, you know, it's a very short recovery time. So, you know, to recover and then to start your training, your build-up to the Tour of France again, it's just there's not enough weeks in there between those events. If you look at Tour and Vuelta, you can call that a bit of a dominance as well. To win two big tours in a season, it's certainly, you know, it's you can call it it's a dominance in the big. In the big tours.
Speaking of the Vuelta, of course, just behind us is the yellow jersey, the Amarillo of the Vuelta in 1988, which was yours. Talk us through that, though, because that went almost to the very end, didn't it? Almost to the finish line.
Yes, well, 87, I was riding very well in the Vuelta, and then I got a problem. I got a saddle sore 3 days before the finish, and I had to abandon the race with the race leader's jersey on my shoulders. So yeah, 88, I went back, and with the idea of trying to win it, and I managed to do that. And of course, riding for a Spanish team, CAS, that was the most important Grand Tour for the sponsor. And you know, the boss of CAS always said, you know, the Vuelta is the most important race for us on the big tour calendar. So to win it in 88 was, yeah, it was great to do that, first of all because of the team, but also I spent many years trying to win a Tour of France, or trying to get on the podium of the Tour of France. And of course then, because of all that work I put in with Tour of France and the Vuelta for a number of years, managed to win it in the end. And let's not forget, I started out my career as a sprinter, and slowly I developed, you know, to becoming a stage race rider, you know, winning Paris-Nice, winning Tour of Switzerland, and then slowly becoming a candidate to win a big 3-week tour. and that was because I was with a director sportif, John de Gabaldry, which worked with me for many, many years. And, you know, he was all the time, you know, trying to convince me that, you know, if I continued on, I could eventually win a three-week tour.
You had to fight virtually to the last day, though, wasn't it? It was a day to go that you, that kind of victory was in your pocket almost.
My problem was in the big tours, in the mountain stages, I was always, you know, losing a little bit of time in the mountaintop finishes. So I was trying to pull that back maybe in the time trial, and that was the way it went in 88. It went down to the penultimate day. There was a time trial, and there I took the race leader's jersey and continued and won the race outright. The rider of my qualities, it was always going to be difficult to win a three-week tour comfortably, but yeah, it doesn't matter how you win. If you can, you know, finish in Madrid on the final day with the race leader's jersey, that's what matters.
Looking around at all these things we're surrounded by, loads of things we haven't talked about here, the Super Prestige Pernod, the cobble from the Paris-Roubaix, the trophy of Liège, Bastogne Liège. If you're only allowed to keep one of them, which one would it be? Which one means most to you, do you think?
The cobble of Paris-Roubaix. And that would be my first one, of course, 84. I think I won it in real... real big style. I was in really good shape, and you know, I rode a lot of the final with another guy, Roger Rogiers from Belgium, and you know, it was the year I think I was in, you know, probably my best shape.
Sean Kelly. And tickets for this year's Rouleur Classic are on sale now. The event runs from November the 2nd to the 4th, and it's themed around the monuments of cycling. Confirmed guests include Felice Gimondi, Adam Hansen, Johan Mazzeo, Cassian Nieuwendomme, Roger Hammond and Fabian Cancellara. You're listening to the Rouleur podcast. The Vuelta may not have quite the glamour and history of the Tour and the Giro, but it does have a deserved reputation for coming up with new and ever more challenging climbs and routes. Spain's a big country with a lot of areas still undiscovered for pro cycling purposes. Javier Guillén has been race director for the past 8 years. What does he look for in a good Vuelta?
We follow more or less a model, you know, when we design Vuelta, but there are two things that we like. First of all, that each state must be an individual history, okay? And secondly, it's important that the race goes from the down to the top, and at the end, our dream, or all organizers' dream, is that Vuelta is decided in the last stage, as we are getting in the last seasons, but it's not for sure. It's not this.
And how much do you have to bear in mind the fact that it comes after the Tour and after the Giro, that it's, you know, it's the last Grand Tour of the year?
Yeah, we are the last Tour in the year, but we are quite happy because first thing, we start in summertime, so when people is in holidays, so we can gather more people on the road. Also, in terms of TV audience, we are a fresh product on summertime, so we can gather more people, both TV and on the road. And secondly, you know, if you get the last 10 years and you compare Vuelta participation to other Tour and Giro, and you compare Vuelta participation when we were in April, definitely our participation is much better now. So I think we are in the right time, in the right part of the calendar, that nobody wants to change.
Because originally, until the sort of mid-90s, the Vuelta was in April, and it was the first of the Grand Tours. It was moved to avoid clashing with the Giro. And at the time, I think that wasn't necessarily a popular thing in Spain, was it? But do you think now that people are happy with its position?
Yes, I think so, because I see year by year, and I see Vuelta data. You know, every year our audience growing up in terms of TV audience, but not only in Spain, but also internationally speaking, we are growing up. Year by year, we sign more international TV contracts, and year by year, it's something that is recognized not only for me, not only for my team, but the rest of the people that work on Vuelta. We see more and more crowd on on the road. So to me, I think the evidence is there. Everybody's quite happy.
Well, one of the things that people seem to like about the Vuelta is it's probably the least predictable of the Grand Tours in terms of the winners and in terms of the stage winners and who will perform well there.
Yes, it is. I think it's because we introduce a different model route since the beginning. You know, in the past there were 3 weeks. So first week for the sprinter, second week mid-mountain, last week high mountain. We break down that, you know. Since the first weekend, we try to introduce some ramps, some mountain stages, something that can break the race, the overall classification. And secondly, and it's something that I recognize, is the, maybe as we are at the end of the season, riders are a little bit tired, they get a lot of kilometers on their legs, and that, you know, makes them more difficult to control the race. That's why it's more unpredictable, the race. I think when those are the two reasons.
The Tour and the Giro, of course, have the Alps, the Pyrenees, the Dolomites. They have the legendary mountains to include in their routes. How do you compete with that? How does the Vuelta compete with that?
Well, we have richest country in terms of different mountains. You know, the difference between Spain compared to France and Italy is that we have mountains around all the country, in the north, south, east, west. I can show you very big and very good mountains in whatever part of Spain, even in the center with the Vuelta del Mundo. We have our own icons, Lago de Covadonga, Angliru, now Ezaro, Vuelta del Mundo. What we have to do is to insist and to expect that riders offer us what every year is offering us, competition, because at the end, the icon depends more than riders than the mountain.
The Vuelta has become famous in recent years in particular for introducing really steeper and steeper climbs, not necessarily the big grand mountains, but shorter and really steep. Is there a limit to how steep you can go in the Vuelta, do you think?
Well, I think the limit is 300%, because there is nothing higher, unless I haven't found. But you said well. I mean, when you introduce this kind of deepest ramp, it's because they are short. If they were long, you never did, because nobody can ride on that. But I have to say that it works. People like. And this is something that links us with the epic. And this sport believes from epic. You know, this is most important thing. When you see our past, when you see what our fathers did in the past, you only see one thing, epic. And we need to introduce that epic, because we need to keep living.
Do you feel pressure every year to find a new climb, a new thing that's going to attract attention?
Yes, I feel the pressure, which is a very nice pressure. But now we are in a situation where we can combine new discoveries with traditional places, mountains. And this is what we are doing now. If you see Vuelta 2 years ago, all our Finnish summit were new, you know, absolutely new. So that showed the strength of Spain in those terms. Yeah, always, every year, we need to surprise with something.
And that's nearly it from this podcast. All that remains is the Ruler quiz. Last time, we asked who came second to Team Sky in the Hammer Series at Limburg. The answer, which we pretty much gave away in the podcast, was Team Sunweb. Philip Mercer was obviously listening. He wins a Ruler T-shirt of his choice. And that's also the prize this month. And this time, the question is, Sean Kelly won the Vuelta in 1988... who finished second? Has to be said, it's not a name that I was familiar with. If you know, usual thing, go to the Ruler website, find the podcast page in the editorial section. All the details of how to enter are there. See you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.